Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here with you every single week, 52 weeks a year, and on this particular Sunday night as we record this, well, no, actually, Monday morning.
Yes.
It is 12:57 a.m.
Yeah, it is. It is, I can confirm that.
This is how much we take seriously the duty of bringing you this podcast every week. Phil, fresh from Budapest, how are you feeling, mate?
Fresh is probably the wrong word. Had a great weekend away in Budapest, seeing all the cultural sites, of course. Lots of Irish bars.
Oh, lovely Irish bars.
Lots of ruins bars.
So they're great.
We went to Budapest on your stag do.
Did we?
I can't remember any of the ruins bars.
I swear to God, I remember about 2 hours of that stag do and they weren't consecutive hours. Like, I honestly don't remember anything.
I remember you drinking lots of the double whatever they were, gins, on the plane over.
Yes.
You had like 5 or 6 of those on the plane over.
It was voluntarily, or were they?
No.
I was going to say, jeez.
Never voluntarily. Yeah, I was in such. I've never had heartburn like it. People mock me for heartburn, right? It felt like I was going to cough up my internals. It was just awful.
That's like getting a dead leg. So people will say, "Oh, you're soft if you've got a dead leg."
Agreed.
If you get a bad dead leg, it is like it's a game changer. It takes you completely out of action. You can't walk.
Yeah, I've never had a bad dead leg ever.
It does exist. Trust me.
But it's a hematoma, technically, isn't it?
It is.
Nick Shonnett's got one and has had to pull out of the England training camp.
Is that right?
Yes.
It's always pulled out.
Yeah, that is. Anyway, we'll get onto that later, but there's lots to talk about. Nice one for listening. You can find us everywhere you are on social media, we are. So get in touch. But I just want to rattle... I'm going to lead this. So I'm going to rattle through some news.
Yes, please.
From the last week. There's only one place to start. Albeit it feels like a long time since the news of the England squad emerged, Cipriani's omission included. So let's talk about this then. The England squad. Phil, what were your thoughts when you saw this? When you saw it?
Do we want to jump straight into Cipriani? Because that has been all the headlines.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go
all the
it.
Headlines have been Cipriani.
Come on then.
For me, and Eddie himself said, he's the third choice fly half.
Well, he didn't. He said third or fourth.
Oh, sorry.
Who's the fourth guy, by the way?
Marcus Smith?
Maybe.
Sam Simmons as an auxiliary fly half. Straight in a 10-man game of rugby. Not big enough to be a number 8, but, you know, chuck him out. One out from the scrum half.
Oh, well. So, funny you mentioned that. This is maybe we could talk about another week or another day. Who would be the best Premiership player for your club team or any club team?
I did see this.
Sam Simmons for me, right? Because he can cover so many positions. He kind of looks like one of us as well. and, you know, that's helpful, isn't it? When the third team centre calls off or, you know, you need flexibility. And I bet he could play hooker too.
Yeah, I reckon he could cover any position in the backs, basically.
And pretty much, he's not small, is he? 6'2". So at level...
He's not 6'2".
Is he not 6'2"?
I think he's listed as 6 foot and 100 kg.
Oh, is he? Oh, maybe not even tall enough to play a second row level 7 then. I'm sure he could do a job though.
Yeah. Cipriani. Come on then.
So I'm okay with that position to say third or fourth, whichever, because that is where, me personally, I would put him in the rankings. The bit that does then confuse me a little bit is the problem when your first choice 10 is also your first choice 12 means that you've only then got one option for your 10, unless he is definitely going to go away from Farrell at 12, which is something that he's done pretty consistently for the last 2 years.
And another thing he has done pretty consistently since he took over is, generally speaking, only have two fly halves in his squad.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Even though this is a slightly bigger squad than...
Yes.
Certainly a normal match squad.
What was your reaction initially, JB?
I thought it was a boring squad, frankly. there's nothing on here which excites me. It's a mixture of people that he refuses to drop for reasons unknown, except for Danny Cipriani. And then guys who I don't really think have earned the right to be there. I mean, as much as I love Chris Ashton, it's unclear to me what he's done since he's landed here to be involved in the England team.
He hasn't done anything
other
than get banned for 7 weeks.
Cipriani, that is a mystery, isn't it? I mean, you're on a losing streak. You're playing terribly. And your solitary win is down to one man.
No, that's so... That's like
he, was it?
I mean, he started 10 in that game, but to say your solitary win is down to one man...
I would say so.
...is rubbish.
You said when I made the point a few weeks ago about Cipriani making a big difference at Gloucester, your point to counteract that was he had one good kick and didn't do much else.
When?
About 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago.
I don't see the point. What's the point?
He single-handedly pulled Eddie Jones out of the mire.
I honestly think, well, okay, so what happens, right, if he doesn't make that kick and Johnny Meade doesn't score?
Oh, no, I'm not saying it wasn't a great kick.
It was a very good kick.
That means Johnny...
I'm just tempering the hyperbole.
Well, no, I think that's exactly... I'm exactly right, which is...
so he did nothing else apart from that kick?
Single-handedly
won the game. No, that was your point...
Your point four weeks ago was... I mean, his moment of genius was that kick.
Yes.
Right? And it took that moment of genius to... Well, hang on. When did England finish in the Six Nations? They finished on a loss, didn't they?
Fourth. Yeah, lost to Ireland at home.
And they also lost to France week before that.
Yeah.
And they lost, to Scotland the week before that.
Yeah.
So he breaks the streak of 5 losing games, right? Nobody else is...
Two losses to South Africa as well.
Yeah.
Before that one.
So... He's important, and he's, you know, quite frankly, a rugby genius.
Yes. So my issue with it is exactly like Phil said. I don't mind him saying, oh, he's down the pecking order. I only want two fly halves. The tangible difference in terms of personnel is Manu Tuilagi is fit, and if that means Owen Farrell is now a fly half primarily, which could be the case, he may well be thinking of changing his setup. But my only issue then is, why take him to South Africa?
Yep.
Yeah.
Why start him in that final test in South Africa if you don't think... Because his form hasn't dipped South Africa and now.
No. Absolutely.
No, in fact, if anything, it's gone up.
So he's shown he's more versatile because he's playing as well in a brand new team.
Yeah.
And this is where Eddie Jones completely confuses me, because... Why spend that time with Cipriani in South Africa if you're just going to ditch him? Same goes. You look at Dan Robson, and pleased to see him in the England squad now. But he was favoured to Ben Spencer. Ben Spencer went to South Africa in the summer. And then, oh no, I'm going to ditch Ben Spencer and I'm going to pick up Dan Robson now. There's so many things like that which... And here's a question for you, or here's one point. We don't have to solve this, but do you agree with this point? I couldn't, with any certainty, say in a World Cup in a year's time... any position in the back line where I would go, that person is definitely wearing that shirt.
Oh, I see,
Johnny May?
Maybe Johnny May.
Johnny May, and I definitely think... I
mean, that's, probably Ben Youngs as well. Other than that.
Well, definitely, I know Farrell is in a shirt.
Oh, no, that's what I mean.
Yeah. But I don't know yet.
And Elliot Daly's in a shirt.
And so is Mike Brown.
Possibly.
No, yeah. Even Mike Brown, just because he'll be 34 or just about to turn 34. So it's...
Mike Brown's playing, isn't he? I would imagine.
My point being, with that being the backdrop...
Probably yes, but not 100%.
With that being the backdrop, that as we, maybe with one position, we can say that person will be in that shirt in the whole back line. To have a player starting your last test, not even being in a 36-man squad, beggars belief.
It does. It just feels slightly confused, and, I guess, is that it's inconsistent logic and argument. Yeah. Consistently inconsistent.
And then, but then you look at other decisions. Gary Graham parachuted into the side. Boise parachuted Boise, yeah. into the side. Nathan Earle still in the squad. Has he got a realistic chance of starting a game in the autumn tests?
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, he took Ben Earle to South Africa. Yeah. Now he's got
no eight, relation.
No, now he's got eight back row players in his autumn international squad. I'm scratching my head.
Right, so Cipriani, even if he's a third choice for fly half, I think you just have to make space for him, because even if he doesn't start, the benefits of having such an amazing player around. I mean, you would think, wouldn't you, just take your best players into camp?
Yeah.
Even if it's so the defence can get used to, you know, working against a genius.
Well, yeah.
Well, why not?
And, yeah. and one point to make that, as I said, the only tangible difference which would make me go, I understand why Cipriani isn't in the squad, is the fact that Manu Tuilagi is fit again, and that might mean he is such a potentially big impact on the dynamic of how an England team plays, that actually... He might think, well, Owen Farrell's a 10 now. But what happens when Manu Tuilagi has to pull out of a training squad? Who got called up? You'd think Cipriani would have been like, right, Danny,
yeah.
Manu's out.
Like.
I want you in. I want you in, because now that would change the dynamic slightly. Who does he call up? Not another centre. Jordan Olawofella.
That yes. makes sense. That's a natural, yeah.
Unless Ben Moon is a direct replacement for... Ben Moon's probably closer in weight to Manu Tuilagi.
And shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beyond me. I can't.
Again, consistently inconsistent.
Is it Danny Cipriani's character? Because Eddie Jones has said it's all on form and it's all a rugby decision. But is it something about him? Because let's remember, when Wasps said they were letting him go, there wasn't a queue around the block for other directors of rugby in England to sign him.
Well, they couldn't afford him, I think, for most.
Yeah,
for
that
most
might have been part of it. But
that will be part of it, yeah.
Oh, okay, so something which you reminded me of upstairs, Tim, pre-podcast, one of my pearls of wisdom, was maybe it is a character thing, because he's such a dominant personality. And I forgot that I mentioned this, but you know, when he plays in a team, it's all about him. And can it be all about him if you've got Farrell in there?
And can it be all about him if he's third choice?
Yeah.
That in itself is a contradiction.
Even if he was first choice 10 inside Owen Farrell, you're right. Cipriani's a dominant character. He runs the ship at Gloucester, doesn't he? You hear players in post-match chats going, well, you know, Danny said there's some things we need to work on, and Danny was really pleased. No, I'm not exaggerating. That's actually what they say, or what I have heard them say in some situations. Owen Farrell's a massive character.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just interesting, that dynamic.
You would ask the question, and it'd be a fair question to ask, who was coaching the England attack before Wisemantle showed up? It was probably Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably Owen Farrell that picked himself at 12 for the Lions. You know, I, that's not even a joke.
It was probably a joint decision, him and Sexton.
Yeah. They did it between them.
Yeah, they looked at the ten shirt. Well, we can't both wear this.
Yeah, why would you even... try and coach them.
I know.
You just let them do whatever they want. But that's the problem, isn't it? Like, maybe those two can get on. I tell you another thing as well. The Fords, both Fords, in fact, let's go with all three Fords, Mike, Joe and George, love rugby. Like, they live and breathe rugby. Whilst other 17-year-olds were out, you know, getting drunk and Snapchatting, George Ford was kicking goals. Like, he's a little bit obsessive about the whole thing. And that's sort of Owen Farrell too. So you can imagine them having quite a good conversation or enjoying talking about the process of rugby. I think Danny Cipriani's got outside interests outside of rugby. And I don't think that always sits well with, you know, very, very serious rugby people.
Yes.
Well, I think there's more questions than answers, but I think we've actually covered off probably... finger on the pulse with all the things that people are scratching their head over. So
Don Armand, no Don Armand.
Oh, I know. Sam Simmons.
Rhodes and Shields are both in.
Yeah.
Even though Shields has got his fractured cheekbone.
Poor Don Armand.
No.
And also, what was it, five Harlequins that they've got?
Five or six? It might be five after Marler's pulled.
I mean,
out.
I would definitely build my squad around a core of Harlequins players. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's all on form, isn't it?
It is all on form. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
So, looking at the squad, the only position really that looks kind of stable is the second rows. Mm. The second row is the names you expect: Laws, Launchbury, Cruz, Itoje, and then Ezekwe's in there as well. So that looks great and stable and consistent.
Yeah.
They're all sensational, all got great experience, great natural athletes. Everywhere else is just a bit...
Mm. Yeah, it's more the uncertainty, isn't it? I mean, this should be a nailed-down team now. It should look kind of like the All Blacks. You know who's going to play, and if anyone else is coming in, you know that they're experimenting. The whole thing now feels like an experiment.
A year before the last World Cup, that's exactly where England were. One player got injured, you knew, you could say, without even looking at the team sheet, I know who's next cab off the rank in that position.
And that was a fault of Lancaster's, that he was almost too rigid and regimented and had his boys and stuck with them. With the exception of the
I was going to say I quite liked that about Stuart Lancaster, and it all went wrong when he changed that blueprint for Sam Burgess.
For Burgess, yeah.
That's very All Black in its way.
I mean, he sort of had some promises, didn't he, Stuart Lancaster, where he wanted everyone to have 50 caps basically. That to him was like the prime number for caps.
Yeah, because it correlated with winning teams.
But it seems just to be like he got the outcome without actually anything, there wasn't any real thought behind it. He just wanted that target, and that's why he went horribly wrong. And it kind of feels like this is almost what they're doing again. I mean, they're sticking with certain people.
This is just chaos, like organised chaos.
Well, actually, no, it doesn't feel like that, because some of them they're sticking with.
Jordan Oliver-Failer's in. He's in the squad. Yeah. He's in the England squad.
No.
He's probably fourth choice winger at Leicester Tigers.
I mean, what must Ollie Woodburn think?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what I don't understand.
Admittedly injured Ollie Woodburn, but he has been in brilliant form for 2 years.
What about, I want to say Seb Jewell, and I don't know why.
what about Seb Jewell?
What about Seb Jewell? This is outrage.
In the England squad.
what's his name? Saracens winger. Electric. Lewington. Alex Lewington.
Lewington.
I mean, that to me is a more natural selection for England than
Jordan Oliver-Fella.
Yeah.
Good, promising as he is, but it's anyway. This is the mind of Eddie. And
one thing I will say about Eddie Jones before we move on this is he is an exceptional idea of talent early doors. So like Smith was basically uncovered by him at Brighton College, and then obviously he's a great player anyway.
Great. So that's why there's under 20 Saxons and then the first team. That's why there's a Premiership League, which he talks about form and stuff, but then generally tends to ignore what goes on in the Premiership.
Yep.
Seems to, yeah.
And do you know the other one as well that always sticks with me is he gave Matt Gitto his international debut before a club debut. So he does have amazing scouting and ID ability. Do you know who else won't be taking the Premiership that seriously? This year, next year, Tim?
Go on.
John Mitchell. Won't be going to any of the games.
But he can watch it on telly.
Oh, you can watch it on telly, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Even though Eddie Jones said, when in defending the Cipriani decision, there's things, I've been to all three Gloucester games, and there's things you don't see on the telly.
Right.
But so according to, by Eddie Jones' own logic, there's lots that John Mitchell, his defence coach,
won't be seeing.
So just one last thing on the training squad before we briefly talk about Mitchell, is this is a training squad. This is not the squad for the Autumn Internationals.
You're quite right, Phil.
Things will, I assume things will change. But again, that doesn't really seem to make sense, because you want the contractual stability. You want the players playing, training together in the teams, the systems.
Yeah, this logic, you hear a lot of people, we've had some people tweeting us at Rugby Podcast saying, and this is a very football way to think, I understand it, but I don't agree with it, we know what all the established players can do. This training squad should be about bringing in the people we don't know about, and that's who should play in the Autumn Internationals. No. We're a year out from World Cup. Yeah. Win every game. Make a statement.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there was
I'm 100% with that. You've got to win every game. England need some momentum with wins
but
going
forward. They're not going to get any momentum, right? We've got our folded piece of paper down there with the names of the next England coach. I know the next England coach, right? It's no one that you expect. I know his name, right? And that is the guy who will be taking England, probably it's the Six Nations.
How is Dimes, anyway?
Dimes, sadly.
John Mitchell. John Mitchell, then. England have got a new defence coach.
Yes.
a really amazing CV.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an astonishing CV. It's a striking CV.
Yes. Unbelievable, some might say.
What did you make of this appointment? Go on, JB. You're itching. Go on.
I don't really understand it. I mean, I don't know what John Mitchell does well, other than continually move jobs. He does that relatively well. Is this just not more of the same for Eddie Jones? Like, isn't John Mitchell just a different version of Eddie Jones?
Well, that's something interesting. So his CV is more like Eddie Jones than anyone else's. He is actually, in terms of his CV, is quite different to someone like Gustard, who's left the role. Because Gustard has done the specific roles previously, and obviously now gone to Quinn's to do the overarching role. Whereas Mitchell has done specific roles for a bit. He's done overarching roles for a bit. He's done more specific roles for a bit. He's done club overarching. He's done national overarching.
Defence has never been one of the specifics.
Yeah,
defence has never. He's done forwards. He's done assistant coaching roles.
I'm going to throw this out there. But what a contrast between those two men. Because Gustard is a very thoughtful chap. You know, he's quite a modern coach. He's all, you know, all the game changers stuff, all the culture stuff. You know, he is more the, you know, more like in your Stuart Lancaster mould, say, than your Eddie Jones mould, or your Stephen Diamond mould, or who Stephen Diamond?
Stephen.
you know, John Mitchell is as old school as they possibly get.
Which is like a bit like Eddie.
Yeah, yeah. And I can you see those two working together, getting on particularly well? I think it's a good appointment.
So, I don't know. Because I don't know what they're like, but yeah, it does strike me as a...
Well, strange enough,
interesting.
I have heard lots of stuff about him, because, of course, he's got a long history at Sale. He's got a long history everywhere, right?
Yeah, he's got a couple
he had a relatively long history at Sale, 3 years, and then he had a very, very short history at Sale.
Yes.
About 6 weeks.
And then went back to university. Did he go back to coach at university or something?
University of KwaZulu-Natal.
Yeah, his family are in South Africa, so that's... Yeah. Anyway, go on, what did you glean?
Well, just basically... look, this is a bit like telling tales out of school, but just basically old-school bully-type coach. I mean, that's pretty much the unanimous opinion.
By your logic, all he needs to do is say, line speed, guys, line speed.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that I could take up this job. I mean, if I was just rousing enough, I would give it, right? I would give this job to maybe the best stage actor you could find. And I would get him to just talk about line speed and passion and...
Wolves.
Wolves.
Play a bit of... I can't remember.
Imagine... Was it Terry...
Play Jerusalem and talk about line speed and collisions.
Was it Terry Nutkin that was the was the guy on...
The
Really Wild Show. Someone like that who's got a good insight into animals and has people like...
Attenborough. His one final... Come on, his one big job.
It's someone who can easily get hold of animals. That's critical. But also you need some dramatic sort of...
I think Terry Nutkin is
the Amdram version of Terry Nutkin would be perfect.
But if he could do, in his character role, he needs an accent, and either like Australia, New Zealand, or a very broad rugby league. Broad northern accent.
Yes, that'd be... Yeah, 100%. Have you ever seen the video of... It's Russell Crowe reading a book to the Rabbitohs.
Oh, yes.
So when he first took over, he made some history, didn't he? He put his book together and he'd open it up and it's a brand new book, but he put dust in it on purpose to blow the dust away before he read it.
Rusty Crowe, the Rabbitohs. Yeah, no, I do remember that.
He would be a great defence coach.
Get Russell Crowe as defence coach for England.
And he knows his stuff.
Line speed.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that should be England's next defence coach, Russell Crowe.
All right, one other brief discussion then we can have. We're a week on from Spencergate.
Yes.
So just briefly, I want to check in with how you feel. He got a 4-week ban, whereas George Smith got a no week ban and the red card rescinded. How are we feeling about this whole situation a week on?
I mean, I'm so bored of talking about concussion. But I'm still pretty uncomfortable. I mean, do you want me to talk about concussion or the ban?
Well, I think just a week on, because there was a lot of... Well, okay, so I'll start and then you can go off there. So my sort of thought about the whole area is I got quite frustrated with... Social media was at its worst.
Slash best.
Yeah. I didn't like how the players were just sort of, were kind of disregarded. Their opinion was totally disregarded.
Yes.
I think they need to be regarded as a stakeholder in this.
Correct.
I do also feel that their job, what they do, is just being brave and being warrior-like and actually protecting them from themselves to a degree as part of it. But I just sort of think the whole thing needs to simmer. The people that were, you know... tweeting at, like, some people, like proper rugby accounts, tweeting Ellis Genge saying, "Oh, so you're okay with brain injury, then, aren't you?"
Yeah. This is where they lose me. So I think I could be persuaded on both sides. I can be persuaded to most arguments, actually, if you give me a good set of facts. But then when the hyperbole comes out, you lose me completely.
So Ellis Genge says, "Oh, the game's changed. I don't like it."
What, you like Alzheimer's?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
You like enforcing dementia on all of the people you play rugby with.
You're dementia now, are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
So
yeah.
Easy. But...
Yeah. So...
Go on.
I don't think the game is going to... There's a strong possibility, actually. The game is not going to survive these exchanges with concussion and the experts. And almost the last people that we need looking at this is actually experts. I know that sounds perverse, that's the way that this is heading now. So all of a sudden, the language is about manageable risk. And no sane person can say, no, we don't want to manage the risk. I mean, that's of course what we want to do. But once you start to manage the risk and you accept that there is a risk, then someone somewhere has then got to come up with an idea of what managed or acceptable risk really is. And therein lies the danger. Because that bar is never going to go higher, is it? That bar's going to... It's never going to be lower. It's going to be higher and higher and higher. So my problem isn't with the professional game. That will last forever and a day. There's too much money, so on and so forth. My real problem is with the amateur game, the grassroots game where I am, because no one has really paid any attention to what the majority of rugby players think or the majority of rugby coaches. Who's going to be in charge? Am I going to be in charge of doing neurological exams to amateur rugby players and clearing them to play or take them off?
Do you know what? For that reason, that's why I'm almost actually coming round to the idea of maybe the armpit height is just because at least that makes something simple.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that I do think about this, when I've reflected on it, is the laws haven't changed. For as much as everyone says... Oh, the laws have shifted, the laws have changed. No, the laws have always been the same. You've never been able to hit anyone in the head.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the interpretation of the laws has changed.
And also the punishment, the sanctions are changing as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm just worried about people who are coaching or people who are responsible for players on a weekend now having this rather large responsibility of being head injury experts. And people say, oh, you're crazy. But I can't see it going any other way. I mean, you're going to... First of all, the RFU are going to come up with some sort of nonsense, evening course. I don't know what it'd be, nutters or something like that, which would be like concussion.
I really hope they don't call it.
In fact,
level two nutters.
Yeah, I mean, they've probably got one. In fact, just look up RFU concussion. I bet they've already got some crazily named course. Right, so you're going to do that. And then once you've done that, are you then going to have to rigidly abide by what they say? And if you don't abide by what they say by accident, are you then liable for, you know, this sort of thing?
CAC. What about CAC? Concussion Awareness Course.
Oh, hang on. Here we go.
They have one.
They have one. What?
It's not nutters. it's called head case.
Of course it is.
Oh, no!
Of course it's called head case. What else could it be called? Right, yeah.
The RFU's Concussion Awareness Program, head case. Aims to increase the understanding and provide information on concussion and other related topics, including how to prevent and manage suspected concussions.
I don't want to know that. I don't want to, I mean, I should know it. I get it. But I don't want that responsibility.
So I think in... My final point on this, before, because there's lots to talk about, so we should move on. But I think Ben K did a demo in before the Friday night game. I forget what the game was.
Oh, yeah.
What was the game?
Exeter Newcastle.
And basically, when I was watching it, the conclusion I came to as I was watching it is, do you know what? The George Smith tackle that he got a red card rescinded for was more dangerous, more reckless, more out of control, if you like, or more the one that's actually where potential bad outcomes are going to happen. That might cause concussion. That was far more dangerous than the Will Spencer tackle, which was just that tiny thin margin where Tommy Taylor is a couple of inches higher, and it's play on. So that's all I would say. The application of the law is confused. There's incidents that happen through every game, as I said last week.
I'd rather Ben Kay have three players, one of them's concussed, and he's got to identify the concussed one and then give him a return to play protocol. That'd be demonstrated, because I actually thought the demonstration he gave was rather contrived.
What you mean from a point of view? What?
Yeah, like, you know, why you can't tackle lower, or you can tackle lower, but if you do tackle lower, this is how the defences are going to have to change.
Well, it made me think, because I was watching it, kind of thinking,
Really?
Yeah, I was. Anyway.
Just on the whole thing, to wrap this up. So, 4-week ban, which, from what I've read, they've applied, whether you like that or not, they've applied the laws as they're written. The bit that then, which everyone has pointed out on social media, that then kind of confuses the whole process is, you've then, across the channel, got Bastereau getting...
Yeah,
1 week further, a 5-week ban for a deliberate swinging forearm smash to someone who's face down on the floor.
Yeah.
Which
is bad.
Which is very bad. And
that's actually assault, I'd say.
Yeah, and that compared to... So Bastereau, in my opinion, should have had a ban twice as long as Ashton. So you've got three offences there that have received similar bans, and one is way worse... Two or three times worse than the other two.
Spencer shouldn't have been banned I don't think. And there's been a lot of people talking about, and I think they do it in, is there a Gaelic football? Effectively, like some people have dubbed it the orange card, the 10-minute sin bin, and then you must be replaced. You can't return to the field. And that seems to be getting a bit of momentum. So,
yeah. So
it's like so that's the Chequers proposal. At the minute, we'll see how that one goes with the authorities.
So, just when we're moving on, something that we mentioned a couple of things in our previous little segment. We mentioned Sam Burgess and the Rabbitohs.
Is he like the most mentioned player for a rugby union pod? Any player?
Certainly, mentions compared to rugby union games.
Yeah.
It must be. Right up
which
there.
Which is, I mean, basically, even when he played the game, the commentary of any match that he was involved in was like, you know, you could have had a try like George Ford scoring today, jinking through. George Ford, fantastic support. Look at the support from Burgess. Burgess on his shoulder. Burgess all the way on his shoulder until Ford dots down.
All the attention was on Burgess.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And Burgess is hugging him now.
Yeah.
He's hugging...
What a hug!
Hugging unknown try-scorer. He's being hugged by Sam Burgess.
Really opened up the space.
That first game, when he was warming up, was it against Quinns?
Hey,
warmed up. They filmed him warming up for 60 minutes. He came on and played 20. Two carries, something like that.
Don't forget his first try assist for the Saxons. That was magnificent. He kneed the ball into the hands of Ollie Devoto, I do believe.
Mate, I remember how excited you were. You got a Sam Burgess sent to you by Canterbury.
We had a Sam Burgess
so
countdown.
Excited. We did.
Like the post Sam Burgess, was it pre Sam Burgess and post Sam Burgess?
Do you know what? If you are totally bored and got nothing else to do, actually, I might do this. I might listen to a pod from the pre Burgess period.
Well,
so excited about it.
Pre Burgess, I don't think we even did a podcast. I mean, it was like. I mean, there was rugby, but it was barren in comparison to post-Burgess.
It's just grey and dark.
Yeah. Oh. Dull, but then post-Burgess came alive.
He's been caught up in some allegations.
Allegations that... So there's been an investigation, and the NRL and the Rabbitohs have both made a statement that No one has broken any of their rules.
So, by the way, what rules may these be?
Well, do they have specific rules about sexting?
Codified
players.
I presume, if you're single, it's fine. If you're married, are they going to write rules about that? I mean,
so the details, and from what I've read, the details are still a little bit unclear. But a woman, a 23-year-old woman, was receiving unsolicited pictures of naked Rabbitohs players.
Okay.
I don't know whose these are. And I think it was multiple players from a social media account that is in Sam Burgess's name.
Okay.
But I don't think, from what I've read...
What's this?
I don't think Sam himself has necessarily been involved in this.
Right, okay. Or, before we continue, did I dream this? Or did we have a discussion about...
Sam Burgess naked? No.
No, dual social media accounts. Oh, no, it was on a WhatsApp group.
Oh, what, couples who share what... who share...
No.
The Fianga boys.
No, I was thinking about a social media account that players have for their normal stuff, and then a social media account that they have to send direct messages and stuff. Did I dream that we spoke about that, or
you've not spoke about it with me?
Forget it. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Okay. Well, all I'll say is to Sam Burgess, if it's all getting too much, it's not too late. 1 year from a World Cup, let's make this happen. Come on.
That is the last thing that England rugby need. Talking about confusion and inconsistency. Sam Burgess, do not get anywhere near team.
If it hadn't already been tried, okay... Eddie is exactly the kind. I mean, he's done with Brad Shields. You know, anyone who's remotely qualified to play, he's going to bring in. If it hadn't been done before, it would be spoken about right now.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He would be the answer.
And if Sam Tompkins' form hadn't fallen off a cliff, the last couple of years, he would have been spoken about.
Right, I've got another one. Right, you know the Nick Kennedy.
Yeah, Mems and Author. Yeah,
yeah, and I've added to that Johnny May. Mum taught Ed Sheeran.
Oh, guitar.
Yeah.
And then was there another one?
Yeah, there was recently. I can't remember. Yeah, someone's dad at Harlequins. I can't remember who was it.
Noel's dad's a fisherman.
Dad's a fisherman, of course. Yeah. And the eight who used to play at London Irish and probably still does, and Gloucester.
Narrowway.
Luke Narrowway.
His dad's a butcher.
Yeah. Well, Billy 12 Trees.
So I know. Yes. I think.
Go on. Well,
I think I know the story.
Well, yeah. So. This would be an example of nominative determinism.
Oh, into this.
So Billy 12 Trees' dad is?
Don't know.
Nominative determinism is like where a name dictates what you do.
Ah, okay. See, the problem is, Tim, I kind of know the twist here, which is it's not his name, is it?
Correct.
Yeah, so, sorry about this.
Billy 12 Trees' dad... is a tree surgeon.
Correct.
Brilliant. Amazing.
And, yes, took his wife's name, presumably because it was like he spied a great marketing opportunity for his business.
I think she was the last of the 12 trees, so it was to keep the name going, and also he saw a smart business move.
Yeah.
Clever. Very, very clever.
Oh, he won serious brownie points. Oh, yeah, it's totally for the... Just totally sacrificing it for the love.
It's also a bloody cool name.
It is.
It is a cool name.
It is. No, I think we're all covered up. Oh yeah, no, one final thing. Manu Tuilagi might have broken. We don't know to what extent.
I hope not.
Yeah, so he's pulled out of the England squad, but from what I read, it was just said with an injury. I don't think I've read what it actually is.
Now on Manu Tuilagi, if I said to you, Ellis Genge got Manu into something.
Mobility scooter racing.
Exactly. Mobility scooters might be top of the list.
What else do we know about Ellis Genge?
Naked cooking.
There's lots of things we know Ellis Genge likes or gets involved in, but we couldn't possibly talk about it on a podcast like this.
But no, Ellis Genge got Manu Tuilagi into snooker.
Did he?
So I saw months ago... There was Tuilagi, Genge, I think Vianu, and maybe Brian Tuilagi were at the Crucible.
The Crucible,
in Sheffield.
Well, boys, I don't want to be a one-upper. I'm going to be a one-upper.
You played snooker with Manu Tuilagi?
No, not quite, but that would be
a hell of a one-upper.
So, First question is, why could I not talk to Tom Wood on Wednesday? So I was meant to interview Tom Wood on Wednesday. Why could I not interview Tom Wood? What was he doing?
Oh, him, not you.
No, him.
He was attending an Open University
so close.
Lecture.
So close.
Getting his hair cut.
Nope. He is just enrolled on a welding course, right?
Awesome.
Yeah. So Tom Wood, hunter, bow hunter, knife hunter, woodworker, everything else, is now learning to weld. But he's not learning to weld on his own. He's taking like half the Northampton team on a night welding course. So it's the fullback, Tuala, I think Marfu's going. There's literally about 12 of them. Imagine going to that welding course.
Nice.
I'd really fancy doing a welding course.
Do you?
I fancy doing a welding course with
Tom Wood.
Tom Wood.
Well, I mean, imagine if you're going in there, you know, because it's your living, because you want to become a welder, and there's, you know, 12 rugby players who are doing it as a hobby, like horse play with torches.
Is there what could make that Tom Wood, after rugby training, going to do a welding course, what could make that more alpha male? It's pretty tough.
Tom Wood is the most alpha man that you'll ever. He's also a black belt in karate and jiu-jitsu.
You going to roll with him?
I think he might murder me. Wow. I'd take him, actually.
So there's been plenty of rugby played this weekend, and it looked like it was going to be a bit of a washout with the weather. We had a pretty phenomenal Sunday. I don't know where you want to start with this whole thing.
So I've seen some of the highlights. I've not seen any live games. So you boys are going to have to fill me in on the action.
Happy.
Okay.
right. So where shall we start? Oh, Saracens are amazing.
Oh, they really are.
I don't know if you've heard this, but they are really good at rugby.
So Gloucester had a couple of injuries in the back row, did they?
Yeah, in the Ludlow first half, but that had nothing to do with. This was a dominant performance. This was a statement. So one of the things that there was a really strong wind, which Gloucester chose to play into in the first half. Second half, you wouldn't have even known that there was a wind because Saracens were so dominant and so tactically astute, and. Yeah, it was. I mean, Johan Ackerman was really honest in what he said after the game. Just said because before the game he'd said this is the big test of where we are in terms of a top four, and after the game he said we're a long way away.
Yeah, it was almost.
We did call it. We said this and a couple of other games are bellwethers for the progression through the season.
Yep.
And we have learned a bit more about Gloucester. Maybe we do have to wait. For next year.
Maybe it is next year, I think.
They've got some players coming, Creel, Mostert, they'll make a difference, but they got dominated. The Saracens' defence, the collision area, they were absolutely massive. The fact that Saracens so dominantly beat Gloucester and came off saying, really disappointed with the last 15 minutes.
Do you know,
conceding two tries in the last 15
minutes. This sounds strange for a team with Danny Cipriani in it, but they did feel a little bit... I felt like I knew exactly how Gloucester were going to play, and exactly what the team were going to look like. And if I think that when I'm watching them play, surely Saracens will be thinking exactly the same thing. So they were up very, very. You won't believe this. Their line speed was spot on, right? but it just looked like they knew exactly what Gloucester were going to do, and they already had the plan for it pre-game.
Saracens are just so. What I've always find amazing about them is they're. And they showed it again today. They are so powerful, ferocious, relentless, but so intelligent. The decisions they make, when to go into a ruck, when not to. Mm. They are so smart and streetwise. It's really real intelligence.
And that opening try that they scored, I think it was a turnover, wasn't it? And then it was like a double wedge kind of move. But just the fact that they just did it, you know, turned it over straight away, knew exactly what to do. It's such a well-oiled... organised machine. I mean, it's almost a cliche now. It's almost boring talking about how good they are. But they are.
I did see a couple of things saying that. So, it's criticism saying that they were cynically lying on the wrong side, taking the extra few seconds to slow the ball down.
Good, it's their job.
Which is, yeah, which if the referee is letting you get away with it, keep doing it.
Yeah,
it's something that the All Blacks do astonishingly well. Is played to the referee and to the letter of the law and get away with it.
What you can legally get away with. And again, that comes back to that streetwise, that rugby intelligence. And that's to be commended, not
It's frustrating.
Not
it's very frustrating when it happens against your team and the ref's not picking it up. But yeah.
But if the ref had picked it up, the point is that they'll stop doing it and they'll find another way.
So, I mean, what else do you want to say other than still? I mean, Gloucester is still a good team, but we just know how good Saracens are now. Now, why is everyone talking on Twitter about Saracens' salary cap? Is this just something that someone's made up, or is
I think they're just so dominant. So I tweeted just like, you know, what do you want to talk about? What questions do you want to ask? And a bunch of people said, "How do they get there? How do they get their squad?"
That's a very, very fine question. Because I would like to know as well. It's
Academy credits, English.
So one part is you grow your own players rather than buy them in.
Yep.
And they've got a massive amount of academy grown players in that, like a phenomenal amount
that
squad.
Let me throw this out there, right? Do you think they get a discount on players? Do you think that when. If I wanted to get Schalke Berger to Newcastle, I imagine I'd have to pay him a lot of money. But to get him to Saracens, I imagine I could pay him less money because he might pick up like a Heineken. I mean, Heineken Cup.
We have spoke about this before, and I think 100% yes.
Yeah. And the other part of that is 100% yes on the medals. In 20 years' time, they're priceless to a degree, those memories that you make and those big games that you appear in. And secondly, is they also, when you go to Saracens, you know you're not going to get smashed every week. You're not going to be playing every week necessarily.
They might get smashed every week on the social side of things.
Absolutely, which is another part of it. But Schalke Berger might prolong his career by an extra year or two, purely because he's at Saracens rather than another club.
Pick up some medals. Yeah. I mean, I always thought that if I wanted to get. I'll give you another one. Sam Warburton. I always thought Sam Warburton should have gone to Saracens for like budget price. Now he's done whatever he wants to do. But there was no way he was going. Sorry, Newcastle. I'm going to say Newcastle again. Or Northampton. Or, you know, one of those clubs. There's just no way.
Yeah. And the other side of it as well is the getting smashed, the social side of things. Yeah. And just they take him off to a few times a season to like Dubai or Oktoberfest. Just. Fly them straight out after a game on a Sunday night. You've got 3 days, lads. Go and enjoy yourself. Come back.
I think it's important to speak up for that, for everything off the field with Saracens because they do so much. They help the guys start businesses.
Yeah.
They do all of that preparation for post-game better than, as far as I can tell, they do it better than anyone. And the players love it. And however they do it, and I don't know, and I'd love to spend time in and understand how they did it, but however they do it, the players seem to love being there. And there's little touches that you just see on the superficial surface that give you a hint.
I'll tell you what they do. I don't know where I've heard this. Do they not have a crash for players like before the game or something? Not for players, for their kids. And the players.
Yeah, that may well be the case. Yeah. One thing I noticed today that I'd not noticed before, which again is only a very, very superficial thing, but just highlights the deeper, broader thing is... you know how Bath were the first ones to start it, and some clubs have international flags on the jersey in the chest between the crest and the manufacturer.
Yeah,
just a little flag signifying they've played for their country. This is so Saracens; they don't. But when you reach 100 or 150 or 200 appearances, you get a number 100, a number 150, or a 200. I noticed it on. Richard Wigglesworth's shirt today.
He's
266 Premiership, but he had 150 on his shirt. Jamie George on his next game, on today's game, I imagine would have had 200 on his shirt. It's just little nice touches where they just create this environment where
I think it should be a stripe on the arm, like a military rank.
Yeah, I love that.
That'd be really cool.
That'd be very cool.
This is a very, very, very good club. There are still doubts in my mind as to how they get all the players in, but there's also no doubting like the quality of the operation. I mean, and also like I was lucky enough to interview Brendan Venter, and when you listen to how he talks, Dr. Brendan Venter, I might add, which actually is a really good comparison for something that we'll talk about later. yeah, when you listen to him speak and how he sort of builds, builds atmospheres and cultures, it is quite inspiring. And you can, you know, if that's been passed down to these blokes and then, you know, on from there, it all does sort of stack up that you would go there for a cut price.
Yeah, and if you are creating talent, like, you obviously get the academy credits, but you get them cheaper for at least for that period of time as well.
Yeah. So now the interesting thing is when they should, well, at some point they're gonna have to get rid of some of them. Some of them have got to go.
They can't all stay there forever. It will be interesting to see, because World Cup year is always, that is, it's such a focus, it's a milestone that everyone works towards, and then the landscape does change after that.
Well, let's segue from Saracens to Exeter, because I think there's one similarity. There's an amazing stat, and it was when Exeter played a couple of weeks ago. There was only two men in their side who played in the Premiership final that they won two seasons ago in their starting lineup. There was maybe only one or two players that were in. Was it on opening weekend? I can't remember.
In the final, they had a fully Zimbabwean back row.
Yeah, so, but not the one just gone. I'm talking the one that they won in 2017.
Yeah, so they started with Kai Horseman.
Yeah.
No, Waldron would have played, surely.
No, I'm sure they started with.
My point being, much like Saracens, you've seen, you know, Scout Brits has gone, Jamie George is now the number one, they'll bring the next one through. Neil de Kock was the scrum half, then Richard Wigglesworth was coming through, now you've got Ben Spencer coming through.
Yeah.
The turnover, that they do progress the players through, in and out. And Exeter, actually, they feel so consistent, much like Saracens, but personnel-wise, they're completely different from a couple of years ago.
And that shows you how good the setup is, how good the coaching is, to identify the players that will fit into the system. And it's a bit of moulding the system to the players and a bit of moulding the players to the system, so that it doesn't matter if you swap Devoto for Witten, or it doesn't matter if you Simmons and Steenson. It all just seamlessly works.
Absolutely right. And they showed that again on Friday night.
Now they've dropped their first point though. So Saracens 4 wins, 4 bonus point wins. Exeter 4 wins, 3 bonus point
wins. The wheels are coming off Exeter now.
Do you know they've kicked 100% of the penalties that they've taken?
Really?
No, they haven't kicked a penalty.
They've kicked one.
Have they done one?
Yeah.
That was a big accolade for Newcastle.
Yeah. And they got it, which means they've kicked 100% of their penalties all season.
That's phenomenal. And they are deadly from 10 metres out.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I love it. I love that grinding attrition.
But it's they get called, like, boring and stuff because of it, but it's so hard to do and so...
I do think it is
so
boring.
Much skill involved.
I actually think it's awesome.
Clubs that are on the receiving end will say it's boring.
Oh, just, boring! All you're doing is grinding.
Pick and go.
Stop it!
Yeah,
that's your job. Yeah. Stop it!
If you think it's boring, stop it.
Yeah, no, I love it. I absolutely love it.
And that, much like, I think I'd love to know. I don't know what how many games at the end of last season Saracen got try bonus, but I think they went on an unreal run in the last 6 weeks of the season. So I wouldn't mind betting it might be 8 games in a row, maybe Saracens have got try bonus points.
Maybe more win with try bonus points.
On the flip side, it's now 120 points shipped by Leicester Tigers in 3 games, in 4 games. Over 120 points. 3 try bonus points against in the first 4 games.
They've conceded the most in the league.
Well,
by some distance as well.
If you're going to be bad at something, be bad at defence. That's what I think, right? Because some of the things which happened on that field today were just mesmeric. George Ford's try.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Ford and Johnny May.
Yeah.
May's pace
amazing.
For that try.
Amazing. So, at least they can play rugby. You know, Cal Eastman came on, turned around the game. you know, so they are really, really good at certain things. Defence is a relatively easy fix. But finding another George Ford or another Kyle Eastman isn't. So I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, but this is interesting because we all predicted a very comfortable home win. Mm. And I've only seen the highlights of this game, like the 3 minute very short highlights. But it says quite a bit about Worcester. It also does say a lot of the kind of downbeat perception that we had of the Matt O'Connor regime that we're kind of assuming had wonderfully ended after a couple of decent performance once Jordan Murphy got involved. There is still going to be some issues, some legacy of that. It's not going to be all rosy for Jordan Murphy.
But they can play, and that's the most important thing.
They've got some serious talent in that back line.
Had Worcester lost, that would have been, from 37-11 up, that would have been an absolute hammer blow.
Yeah, it really would, wasn't it?
But it was a last-minute try were they level?
They level, yeah.
Ooh.
That's amazing, isn't it, that they got the try? After shipping all those points, I mean, it is amazing. And they really should have two wins. They should have had the one at Wasps or at home to Wasps.
At home to Wasps, yeah, first game of the season.
Yeah, when did Duncan Weir become a world-class fly-half?
There's a brilliant picture, a tweet from Worcester. It's just Worcester. Yeah. When he scored his 22nd point, the conversion to win the game, and it's his try celebration, and it's his completely stony face looking at the camera, really celebrating their...
Does anyone look at him and think, Toby Booth, Bath coach?
I do now. There was a picture I saw of Duncan Weir, which probably hinted at how much celebration was going on. I bet those Worcester boys were having a good night out tonight.
Good for them.
Duncan Weir, obviously, there'll be a time limit where the reporters and the cameras and stuff have to get their job done. So they'll have wanted to interview Duncan Weir. I think he was man of the match. So he would have been going out to do his interview. But he was obviously having such a good time in the changing room that there's a photograph of him being interviewed. And he's in a shirt, and that's all the TV will see, but he's in his pants.
Yeah. I'm about to ask you something. Have you ever interviewed someone in just a shirt and no pants?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
No.
Have you?
No. Now, I know the Twitter account that's on. Whose is it?
Sam Roberts.
Sam Roberts, that's right, yeah.
So the try scorer, was his name?
Ted Hill. Debut. Two-try debut.
And the winner away at Welford
Road.
That's
amazing.
Hell of a debut.
That is a hell of a debut.
Debut. Yeah, I think Tigers are going to get good. I think they're going to get really, really good now.
Wait, Tigers?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. They are scoring a lot of points.
they're conceding
a lot of points.
A lot.
But they can fix that. That is fixable.
They've conceded 26 points more than even Sale, who are the next most.
Mm. Let's just talk a second about some of the individual performances, particularly from Worcester. I thought Ryan Mills was outstanding, some of the stuff he did. And Bryce Heem is such a powerful bloke.
I didn't realise how big a unit he was till I stood next to him at the start of the season. He was, he's a big boy.
Yeah,
big, strong boy.
Mills is pretty big too, to be fair. And when he's fit, that's his biggest problem, isn't it? He's not consistently available. Or at least he hasn't been in the past. He might be slightly better now. But he can do it all. He can pass, he can run, he can kick. He's played fly half for them. I think at 12 he's absolutely brilliant. I'd love to see him have a good, consistent run there. Because I don't think he's a million miles away from international recognition. At least that's standard. Because he can do everything.
Mm. He can play 10 and 12.
Benteo to come back as well. Who are the... Where do we put the pecking order of relegation contenders then? Because Bristol chalked up a win.
Yeah.
Against Quins.
Bristol are going to end up on something like 6 wins, I would guess.
No, they're on two out of 4 now.
Yeah.
I think if they can continue their home form, so you get big crowds at home and just make the game difficult, put pressure on your opponents... They might be all right.
two more rounds before Europe, and the Premiership season is more than a quarter done.
Yeah. Well, just going back to Bristol a second, right? They're dangerous now, and in the back of their mind,
Sir Charles.
They've got Sir Charles to come back in. But in the back of their mind, they must be a little bit nervous, thinking like, oh, you know, it's a big step up from the championship. You know, I don't know how we're going to go. How's this group of players? What are they going to be like with some confidence? Because they already play wide and expansive. Imagine if they think that they're going to actually start winning games. And they go, they could be a seriously good team by the end of the season.
So would you put them ahead of Worcester in the pecking order for relegation?
Well, pre-season I had Bristol as 10th.
10th, okay. Who do you have going down?
Worcester.
Worcester, yeah.
Worcester, well, I don't know who
I said. I still make Worcester favourites to go down, but Quinn's, I mean, for all the talk of Gustard cleaning house and turning things around, I think we've seen now it's a much, much bigger job than that.
Yeah. So I think it could be anyone. Not anyone. There's Sale. There is Worcester, Bristol, Harlequins.
Oh, wait, you think Sale could go down?
Northampton. I don't think they will, but I think at the moment, I mean, the bottom of the table.
So there's six teams that have only won one out of their first four games. Quinns, Leicester, Worcester, Newcastle, Northampton and Sale.
Mm. So it could, we don't know.
You probably take Leicester out of that. And I think Newcastle and Northampton will have enough.
Yeah.
Probably. But the others, yeah, it could be any of them. And stranger things have happened.
I think the new team, because obviously that they're adjusting. All teams with new coaches are particularly vulnerable.
When I look at Worcester, I think amazing backline, but pack, they're not going to be able to manage for a whole season against the packs they're going to come up against. So I still,
especially when the weather gets more difficult.
Quinns have got issues. Quinns have got some issues.
Do you know
why
Quinns? I'm going to go with Quinns for maybe my favourite to go down. Is because when international time picks up, they're not good anyway. And then they lose all of their good players. So, come internationals, what exactly are they going to do?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, and their discipline is horrendous.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. They're shooting themselves in the foot.
So, they had three yellow cards on
Benny Tapps. I mean, not because I have Harlequins in fantasy rugby draft as my front row, but Joe Marley's yellow card, that was harsh.
So it was Benny Tapps, I thought.
Yeah, actually, he was,
he was on the wrong side. There was no prior warning. It didn't seem that egregious to me. But
anyway, discipline is definitely an issue. They've got some issues generally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll quickly talk about Bath. I think they're going in the right direction. Good win with what looked like a makeshift back line.
Blackadder's turned you around a complete 180, hasn't he?
You were calling for his head not long ago.
Yeah, and this is why. Because even though they lost against Bristol, I thought they looked very powerful in the first 20. And I thought if there's some sort of like upward curve here. The problem with Matt O'Connor is I couldn't see how he pulls this back. There was no plan in place. He was just completely rudderless. But on the other hand, Blackadder has had a plan. And his plan was to bring in the boy. Is it Govan Dempsey that he's brought in?
Mm-hmm.
So he's brought him in. So if they continue with this incredibly powerful game, and that pack is pretty beefy, right? If they can impose themselves and steadily get better and then steadily open it up, they could be a very good team towards the end of the season. So even with a makeshift back line, they still manage to win.
And they've got the kind of depth that means they can rotate players in, keep them fresh.
Yeah.
When everyone's fit, that is. Todd Blackadder signed a one-year extension to his contract, which is an interesting thing to happen at this stage.
So, how many years did he have on it?
I think this was his last year.
Was it?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know.
No, hang on, because
I don't know about that. I just know he signed a one-year extension. So, doesn't matter. The point is, it's a show of faith and it's a show of
one-year extension
confidence.
Is not a show of faith. That is pragmatic.
No,
for some
at
reason.
This stage of the season. Early days when there were question marks, and it was only a few weeks ago people were calling for his head.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, if they'd have lost that Gloucester game, I probably would have binned him.
In this game, so the conditions looked appalling. It's obviously very low scoring. Was it two Reinach intercepts? Well, there was the Freddie Burns intercept, and then the Reinach, he throws like a three-man miss pass that gets turned over, which was ended up going to Kokonasiga to glide in.
And by the way, if Danny Cipriani had passed the ball that Elliot Stook passed to Joe Thocker the singer to score the try, yeah, we would not have heard the end of it. Yeah. No, so let's mention a lock making an amazing play.
That was a good pass. The difference is Danny Cipriani does it every week except for this week. But every other week at least.
Right. JB's beloved Sale.
They're not my beloved Sale. I'm in neutral. I'd also like to point out that, sadly, Wasps actually did the double on North West Rugby this weekend. They beat Sale and they beat Furswood Waterloo in the 12-15s.
Oh, in the women's.
Yeah, so that's pretty rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah, the score was bad. Actually, it wasn't a bad performance by Sale. I actually thought that the score was... I mean, like, first 20, I was convinced they were going to win. In fact, when I rewatched the game, I was convinced they were going to win up until about 60 minutes. But just, I mean, some of the things that didn't go their way. Like, the, what's his name? Sam James break and then chip and chase.
For Denny Solomona not catching the ball.
Oh, my God. You know, just, you know, John O'Ross.
You sound very neutral in your reaction to these.
Yeah. John O'Ross not being able to. I mean, we actually spoke about this, didn't we? Like, why? So Nathan Hughes is something very strange. He picks up the ball and goes where the opposition scrum half is.
Runs to the left.
Runs to the left, right? And usually you run to the right.
Oh, everybody, in school, it's always try and get the tight head up, wheeling up, and then the number eight break, you go right.
Yeah. Well, he's like, no, I'm just going to run over AJ.
I'm just going to, don't care, run
like, like AJ and Cliff. And it takes John O'Ross completely by surprise. He's still pushing on the scrum. As you know,
I don't know how a number eight pick takes a blindside flanker by surprise 5 metres out from your own line.
Well, he's played.
I don't really understand that.
Yeah. No, I don't really get that either. But it's John O'Ross. He doesn't make many mistakes. He's a great tackler and just wasn't
so. I'm interested in the Sale thing. I'm interested in Steve Diamond's comments after the game. He said maybe what we're asking, as in him and the coaches, what they're asking of the players is too complicated. I thought it was I get the feeling maybe he meant it tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
but I think that could be taken by the players as much as anyone as calling us stupid or like.
I'm sure the Sale players would be called not worse than that.
Oh no, I'm sure, obviously, but
mostly by Steve Diamond.
It seemed like a strange thing to do after a loss. It appears.
I thought that
it could appear to be like saying, "Not my fault. It's the players aren't doing what I've told them to do."
It's such a tricky one. I mean, I don't actually think that is correct because
Sale. I only said it could appear like that.
I don't think what he said was correct. Because when I look at that game, I don't see huge mistakes in, you know, the systems of play and loads of drop balls or people don't know the call or, you know, nothing like that's really occurring. They were just I felt they were just a little bit unlucky more than anything else. To the point about what the players think, I think they know what Steve Diamond's like. I don't think that'll upset them.
Well, I'd be interested to hear what JB you think of that of the article which appeared in The Independent about Steve Diamond, if I can describe it, I don't know if you've seen this.
I've read it.
Oh, yeah. You have read it. What was your reaction, Phil?
I've been in some of Diamond's press conferences. I've rarely had the front row seat that you have had on many occasions, Tim, but I've seen it firsthand. And I know, the way that this is written, I know exactly what he's referring to.
It paints the picture, doesn't it? It paints the picture pretty bloody well.
It does come across as like a personal attack on Steve Diamond from Sam Peters, who wrote this, which is a bit. It comes across as a bit odd to me.
Well, okay,
to have that personal attack.
Seems like a personal attack, but what he's actually doing is piecing together lots and lots of facts, and lots of things which have happened, which I can't think off the top of my head. Things like. Suggesting players get up off their feet and carry on, despite potentially having head injury. I think I'm describing this accurately. I want to be clear. Go and read the Independent article. You see what I mean? So he strings together lots of facts, but in a way that creates a narrative that's far from complimentary.
Yeah. So I got to say, the writing itself and the piece, it's compelling reading. I mean, I actually really enjoyed reading. And finally, you know, someone is actually covering Sale, and how refreshing it is, right? How refreshing it is to actually have someone consider a director of rugby and then write about that director of rugby in terms other than just glowing, you know, just glowing praise.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think he's got it completely misjudged because, you know, journalists being journalists, they value certain things. And the idea that he isn't a modern coach is completely wrong because he's a very, very modern coach. People don't give him any credit for that whatsoever. If you watch Sale play, you don't think, oh, that's an old school team, because they're not an old school team. I mean, you don't assemble a squad like that and you're an old school team. They've got people like Marlon Yard, Denny, Barry McGuigan. That in no way rings true. Reading it sounds a little bit like a very long and roundabout way to complain about a lack of Wi-Fi. And I wonder...
That did come across a little bit.
Yeah, like, if your Wi-Fi is so important to you, why don't you just hotspot it on your phone? You know, you're not entitled to these things. And also the idea that there's a modern way and that, you know, we should all bow to the altar of this modern way. Well, we can't all be Brendan Venter.
The modern element that he's talking about and the old school element is in relation to things like player welfare.
But like...
Not style of play.
But
here's... Because the list of things that they string together, and again, I'm not saying I agree, disagree, I'm just saying what Sam Peters has written here. He's, for example, he says, this was the same diamond that 3 weeks ago implied on-field medics are now too conservative after Tom Curry was knocked unconscious.
Well, he didn't imply it. He said it.
Yeah, yeah. Tom's fine, he said. He got a knock to the head. It's nothing serious. If you're out, and I think he was momentarily knocked out, that's what they have to go through. This was the same diamond who said last season was hit with a 6-week stadium ban for conduct prejudicial to rugby after claiming Craig Maxwell Keys made decisions up in Sale's defeat to Exeter.
Yeah, but what have those two things got to do with each other? But go back to the old school thing.
Yeah,
Sale don't do any contact during the week. I mean, if he was going to really research that, what he would say is, yes, Diamond's very demanding of his players on game day, but they've actually got the lowest injury rate in the Premiership. Didn't mention that. You know, so it isn't a fair reflection. Now, the other thing is, there is an element of Steve Diamond which is wild, right? You have met him many a times. I have met him many a times.
And can I say for the record, as a character, I would not want to not have him in the game.
Exactly. He's like a modern-day Al Davis. Now, if you don't know who that is, that's a guy who started as a Raiders coach and ended up owning the whole thing, you know, and doing it in very unorthodox way. Like I said before, not everyone can be Brendan Venter. He has a very particular set of skills.
Particular set of skills.
Exactly right.
I will find you.
And Steve Diamond has his set of skills too. Sometimes I think it's more of a show. So everyone thinks he's an absolute, some Mancunian hard man, when actually he looks after his people very, very well. I don't think that, you know, that was reported. I think it was a fun article and it was a compelling read.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't think it even comes close to describing what Steve Diamond is actually like.
Yeah, no, I would actually agree with that. But when you, it is quite interesting in one article. If you just want like a meta article of what's all the things that Steve Diamond has done that's either caused him to have a touchline ban or for some people to raise their eyebrows, it's all in one handy article right there. And so you can understand why he could be a divisive character. But as I've said, from my opinion,
I'll just mention one more thing, right? And
I like him as a character.
Yeah, this is quite interesting. I have no idea if this is true. I'm literally making it up on the spot here, right? This is pure speculation. But it would not surprise me one bit if Steve Diamond worked at Sale for no salary. It honestly would not surprise me. He's independently wealthy, okay, because he's got a string of other businesses. He doesn't need to be in rugby. So a lot of other directors of rugby, if they didn't want to be in rugby, they would have no...
Mate, you've got
they would have nowhere else to go.
You've got full Diamond now. What are you talking about, JB?
Just because you work at Sale... For no salary.
No. I'm just saying he's completely unusual, as in like rugby isn't his only thing. He's got many other interests.
That's the case for lots of people.
Yeah, but not many directors of rugby. I mean, they're so all immersed in rugby. For the most of them, that is their only thing. I don't think you disagree with that.
That is true from what I know.
Yeah. But he's like, you know, he's got companies, he's a board member. Yeah. And he's done it basically
shareholder
from scratch
as well.
I'm not sure is the answer. Mm. I'm not sure. Maybe. Mm.
There we go.
Good article. But not the whole story.
Yes.
I'd love to see something equally as scathing about... I mean, there are other directors of rugby that you could really go to town on. I mean, Matt O'Connor should have had something similar written, like written about him.
There could have been all sorts written
about... Well, the rugby writers, you know, it was you first and then Steve Diamond.
Yeah, they came for our podcasters and then our directors of rugby. Yeah, I'd like to see more stuff like that, actually. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Other results?
Yeah, other games that you saw.
So not seeing any of the Pro 14. I've seen the results.
Yeah, it didn't... Well, I was correct in saying that Ulster's unbeaten... Ulster's winning run was going to come to an end. But their unbeaten run didn't come to an end.
Their unbeaten run, an astonishing last-minute try again, but not to win it this time.
This lad, talk to me about Sexton.
Don't know much about him.
Who?
So
this young lad, Ulsterman.
Scored.
Gas.
So, yeah, he
scored. Unreal.
What, there's another Sexton?
No relation.
Yeah. He scored a very good try in the...
There must be a relation. I'm not having it.
The A-League.
Yes.
yeah, phenomenal gas to go 95 metres or whatever it was. Don't know much about him other than that.
No.
I've seen the try, but yeah.
Crazy gas.
Yeah, well, my Pro 14 experience this week was recording the highlight show, getting ready to sit down and watch it, and then realising Benetton had lost. And then not watching it, because what would be the point? To Ospreys as well.
Ospreys, who, after getting a hide-in last week, brought back quite a few of their big guns for the Benetton, taking Benetton seriously.
As they should do.
Leinster dished it out to Edinburgh. Looked very, very good.
That was a very nice Leinster team.
It really was. We talked about that.
Yeah. The two big surprises for me, Munster losing at Cardiff.
Mm-mm.
Is a shock.
That is
and
a shock.
Southern Kings beating Glasgow.
I know.
What?
Southern Kings.
What?
I'll say it again.
How I missed that? Where?
Southern Kings beat Glasgow. Southern Kings were 24-0 up at half.
Oh my God, Southern Kings beat Glasgow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, yeah. I really cannot believe that. I would have. Because it's not the strongest first team, but there's a lot of talented players in that Glasgow side.
Oh, it's a full Glasgow side. Peter Horn is playing 10, not the boy.
Stuart Hogg's out of the Autumn Internationals.
Yeah, Hogg not there, so Jackson playing 15.
I'm reading this team.
Seymour, Hugh Jones, Greg Van Der Merwe, Nick Frisby's in at scrum half. He's not far off the full strength
so
team.
I'm seeing this result. I'm reading the team and I'm thinking, like, there's obviously been a major air disaster, which I've not heard of, and they've had to play some scratch team. But this is a... I'm stunned.
Yeah. Southern Kings won.
Yeah.
And so how many games is that they've won in total since they've joined the Pro 14? Is that game 3, maybe, they've won?
something like
that. I haven't seen any Premier Sports. How are they? Because they're covering every game, right?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
What's it like? The live games, are they? Is it good?
I watched the highlight show, which was midweek on Wednesday.
Okay.
Because I quite like that. Do you know what?
Is it like a full on production?
The answer is this is quite bad. I've only watched two games on Premier Sport, and both of which I've been extremely drunk after playing rugby myself on like a Saturday night.
More interested in that chicken burger.
Yeah, so I literally couldn't tell you what the production's like. I will watch it properly at some point.
And I'm assuming that Tok H lost because you haven't mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, that's what's good. Yeah, I played the weirdest game. So we played Oldham. Now, if you don't know this much,
it's, Mike the Fords are from there.
Yeah, it's a place where the most talented rugby players in the world come from. The Fords, Carl Eastman, just to name a few. Sir Kevin Sinfield.
Sinfield, yeah.
You know, it's got a rich rugby heritage. So obviously, most of it's rugby league. We're playing rugby union, but weird things happen when you go to rugby league towns. So we were kicking off, and then their number five would catch the ball, and he basically just spiral kick it back. I was like, how does he know to do that? Rugby league. You know, all these players have got... There's no one in that team that can't kick a ball.
No, he was just number five. He was actually a winger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly right. It's just, yeah, it's just a very, very scuffled team. We lost by 2 points in the end. But, yeah, tough game.
I blame the coaches.
Tough.
Yeah. Blame the player coach.
Maybe the coaches were just... need to simplify it though. It was the players couldn't understand what you were doing.
We have it pretty simple at Tok H. Yeah, no, Oldham are
maybe on a weekend off I'll come down in my blazer and I'll come and interview do a post-match interview.
Yes,
with JB.
That'd be amazing. Would be good fun. That and I can only speak in cliches. Guys need to work harder. No, we need to work harder as a group. Disappointing one match at a time.
Yeah, don't get ahead of yourselves.
Exactly right. Yeah, it's a tough game.
I'm trying to think if there's any more rugby.
The other result I did see, Montpellier absolutely smashed Toulouse at home.
Yeah, they did.
Montpellier, who've been struggling, like losing a few games, 60-odd, 15, something like
and
that.
And Clermont lost as well.
Did they?
I think so.
Ooh.
So let's move on to next week's games then. I think, and am I right in saying again, Phil, you and I had a 6 out of 6 in the Premiership?
No, Worcester.
Oh, no, Worcester, you're right. Damn you, Worcester.
Worcester.
I mean, well done, Worcester.
Which one did I get wrong?
Bristol and Worcester.
No, I'd have got Bristol.
No. Me and Phil said Bristol. Pretty sure I said Bristol. Harlequins.
I'm pretty sure I said Bristol.
I can't remember. I can't.
We said Bristol.
I definitely said Bristol.
I can't think back that far. Right. Before my voice completely gives up on me.
See, the genius of JB is... He knows no one can be bothered to go back and listen to old episodes.
I think you're showering me with faint praise when you say, like, the genius of the lie. But I definitely said Bristol. Bordeaux beat Clermont, 23-19.
There nice. You go.
That's Bordeaux.
Joe Worsley.
What right. did Lyon do? Lyon lost. That's a shame.
Fixtures.
Yes, go for it. So, Pro 14.
Guinness Pro 14. Friday night, Cardiff host the Cheetahs.
Cardiff.
Which, yeah, after Cardiff's good win this weekend, give me Cardiff. And Edinburgh host JB's beloved Benetton.
Edinburgh host Benetton. I think Benetton will do them.
Edinburgh. No, Edinburgh at home.
Edinburgh
home.
What? Okay.
Then Saturday, Zebre versus Ospreys. Depends what Ospreys team they put out.
I mean, it depends what Zebre team shows up.
True.
Mind you, Zebre lost to Dragons, didn't they?
They did.
Now, I wonder if they'll be flying back or they'll spend the week in Wales. A lot of travel, that. Or is it?
Not is it really. Ospreys, is it?
2 hour flight.
Don't even know where Zebre are based. Where are they based?
Italy.
Yeah, generically. Generic case. Any Italian airport will do.
Somewhere in Italy.
You've not mentioned London Scottish. Off the mark, 27-24.
You should have a look at their second halves. They are unreal in the second half. They've been in every game this season. They've been adrift at half time and stormed back in the second half. Got a win.
Is that attributable to fitness, improved fitness, or is it?
Well, I think it's probably attributable to incredible half-time team talk.
Yeah, it must be, mustn't it? Just changing things around, got a whiteboard out.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what you need to do, boys.
Any given Sunday stuff. So anyway. Oh, no, I'll tell you what I haven't mentioned. And bearing in mind, as I say this to you, you've got this far, so you clearly, you know, are well in with the pod, and we very much appreciate that. But it's 2:20 a.m. In fact, we need to get this done.
Yeah.
It's 2:20 a.m. This is how committed we are to doing the podcast. So how committed are you? How committed are you to personal grooming? That's the question I want to know.
That's a great question.
Because if you are committed to personal grooming, as you should be, as any gentleman or woman should be, personal grooming is important, and we've got the perfect deal for you. Cornerstone, you've heard us talking about it. It's German precision engineered razors delivered to you in a Cornerstone presentation box. No more going to the supermarket or being caught short. You get amazing razors delivered to you, and because you listen to us, you get to try this with no obligation. We think you'll love it for just £4. £4 for six razors and your own engraved aluminium weighty shaft. Get online, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or...
Egg 10, checkout.
There you go.
Perfect.
Right, Premiership.
There's a couple more games to run through.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Do you want me to do it? Leinster are going to beat Connacht, Scots are going to beat Kings, Munster are going to beat Ulster, and Glasgow are going to beat Dragons. Shall we move on?
Ulster to continue the unbeaten season.
Of course, they've not lost, have they?
Although, I don't think they are going to. I think the wheels are going to come off.
Hey, Munster weren't very good this weekend.
Yeah.
Got hammered.
They will correct that.
Right.
They'll definitely correct that.
Okay.
Right. Prem. You got him, G? Do you want me to do it?
I'll do him. Newcastle Wasps.
This is interesting.
At Newcastle. By the way, two Friday night games back-to-back at Newcastle.
Yeah.
Isn't that the third of the season? Third televised game of the season?
Third televised game for Newcastle.
Bloody hell.
You make top four... You get more
TV. Two games at Sale as well.
Has it? Yeah. Right.
I'm going to go for Newcastle. I think Newcastle, they were so ferocious, those guys. And they stuck with Exeter for an hour. Well,
yeah, they did, didn't they? They played really well.
I think they played well.
You didn't even mention Johnny Williams yet.
Yeah. And they rested up a few players as well. I think they've identified again with the Europe. They're now in the Champions Cup. They've got to rotate their players in and out. So Gonaver was out. Sinotti was out. Radwan was out, and they brought in two new wingers.
Yeah, who is that boy?
Kibirigi
can play.
Yeah, he can play. So I think I fancy Newcastle.
Yeah, I think Newcastle are due a win. I mean, they're playing well. They've come up against. Have they played Exeter? Who did they have last week that was tough?
Oh, they've had Saracens at home. Saracens and Exeter at home they've had.
Yeah. Yeah, tough. And now they've got Wasps at home. Yeah, I think they can beat Wasps.
I think they can. Wasps got a win on the road at the weekend, and they very rarely have done... Well, they haven't done that in a long time. They've never won at the AJ Bell Stadium.
Yeah, last time Wasps beat Sale away, who was the captain?
Lawrence Dallaglio?
Bit more modern than that.
Pascal?
Nope.
Was it... Who were the other captains?
Mazzi?
No. Nope. Andrea Mazzi?
Yeah.
Ooh, no.
Southwell?
Nope. Is Southwell a captain?
I don't know.
He'd be probably captain games.
I tell you what, one of the greats was.
Betson? One of the... Oh, Reese. Tom Reese.
Tom Reese is captain.
Reese.
Yeah. Last time they beat Sale away.
I can remember one game where Sale were absolutely furious that Wasps said they didn't want to play the game. And before the game had even been called off officially, there were pizzas being delivered to the bus. I remember seeing that outside Edgeley Park. I mean, the game was never going to go on. It was a total washout. But before it had officially been called off, it was always going to be called off. Before it had officially been called off, pizzas were being delivered to the bus for the journey home.
So I'm not going to name the tired prop. I know we've told the story many, many a time.
Oh, yeah.
Many a time.
Oh, we know this one. Yeah.
But a certain very, very important prop wasn't able to play for a certain team that one of us has played for. So they decided to flood the pitch on a frozen night to make sure that they couldn't play the day after. outrageous behaviour.
And that may or may have not consequentially caused a team to get relegated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which one?
I'll tell you all. I can't remember which teams we're talking about now.
Yeah, I can't remember which team. Yeah.
No, or which prop.
Or yeah. Anyway,
I mean, it's interesting that you wouldn't be able to remember. It can't be Phil then, because Phil only played for one side, so that would be easy to remember.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That would be very.
Must
simple.
Be one of my many sides. I can't remember which side it was.
Anyway,
let's move on.
Yes, let's move on. So JB and I are going for Newcastle, and you're.
Give me Wasps.
Wasps.
Yeah.
Newcastle. Wasps on an artificial service could be pretty tasty.
And Newcastle struggling with a bit of momentum at the moment.
Yes, they are.
Then Saturday. So Bristol at home to Northampton.
Bristol are going to win this.
I'm with you.
Bristol will win that. It's just, I can't see them not winning it.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Bristol.
That's
Northampton are so close.
They are
close. It's going to click at some point.
Dan Bigger missing a kick.
I know.
It's just unheard of. It's particularly a big high-pressure kick. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Northampton are not bad. But they're going to lose this one.
Mm. Wow.
Phil?
Bristol.
Yeah. Watching Bristol is weird because they run in front. They seem to do a lot of sideways running, and the opposition seems so spread out. It all seems to unfold in front of them and confuse whoever that they're playing
and themselves.
I think they confuse themselves. That's,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
What's next, Phil?
Exeter, Worcester.
Exeter.
Okay. Now this is
back down to earth.
Back down to earth for Worcester. Exeter 5 points.
Oh, there's going to be a big score here. It's going to be a big score.
There was 11 tries in that Leicester-Worcester game.
Was there?
Yeah.
Well, so this is going to be a big score. Gloucester Harlequins. Someone is going to get a hiding, and I don't think it's going to be Gloucester.
Yeah, I think Harlequins, they played well in that first game against Sale, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
After that, they've not looked particularly good.
So 4 weeks in, I think now's when sides that have big squads will start to look ahead to European matches in 3 weekends' time and start thinking about changing in. So I think for Exeter, it's a good weekend for them to, not wanting to disrespect Worcester, but it's a good weekend for them to
manage their squad.
And they've got a huge squad as well.
Which could be interesting for fantasy rugby draft pickups.
Yeah. Mm.
Might be some speculative free trade pickups going on
there. Why don't you sign up to all the why don't you sign up to all the press emails, Tim, and then you get the embargoed teams before everyone else? Just saying. Yeah, that's an idea.
Do they do those?
Yeah, of course they do. Do you know this?
No, I didn't. No, I don't know.
Oh. unbelievable. then there's Saracens Bath would be the next one.
Yes, big win for Saracens.
Yeah,
Saracens who will continue to manage their squad as they generally do.
If Bath throw that whole pack into this, it's going to be interesting.
Well, Francois Lowe has not been taken with South Africa.
No,
whereas
they have taken Vincent Koch for Saracens.
Saracens.
Huh.
And they have taken Vili LaRue.
And Faf as well.
Something went on with Vili LaRue.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned
because
this.
Because I don't understand. Dai Young, before the season, said Vili LaRue, I think he said, Vili LaRue was only going to play, they'd come to an agreement where he's going to play three rugby championship games, as in the three that he's already played, and one autumn international. And now it appears that he's not going to be a Wasp player until...
Yeah.
December.
So I
just want to say, I drafted him to my fantasy rugby draft team on the basis of Dai Young's earlier statement. So I feel cheated.
Something weird is happening here, right? So I tweeted the other day, watched some rumours about Wasps, and this is what I was referring to. I have heard from a relatively good source, right? A very good source, that he might be on his way. He might be on his way after the next game. So he finishes with Wasps next game, and then he's gone to South Africa, but he's not coming back.
What the rumour is, he might not come back At all. That would be interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, I could potentially see that. I could pretend, you know.
But that would be expensive for anyone to buy him out of his contract. Because that's what it would be.
Yeah.
My assumption.
And obviously, I'm duty bound and it's my job to say that that's pure speculation from JB.
I've got it from somewhere. Let's put it away. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I couldn't confirm it. I didn't get a denial from Wasps. I did phone them. So yeah, we'll see how that one unfolds.
Interesting. Where were we? Oh yeah, Saracens Bath, big win, and then.
If Bath have their best pack out, it could potentially get competitive.
That's what I found so amazing about the game this weekend is Gloucester, their pack. We were talking about how good it was.
Yeah, that's true.
And they got dominated at Allianz Park.
Gloucester's pack right now.
And that was without Billy Vunipola for Saracens as well.
Gloucester's pack right now is very good man for man on paper. Saracens' pack is very good man for man on paper. And even better when you put those individuals together.
Yeah,
you're right. I think it will be a big Saracens score.
Yeah, but probably another 5-point win for Saracens. And the final game of the weekend, the two teams with the worst defensive record in the Premiership are playing. It's Leicester hosting Sale.
the Tribal.
There's no way I'm going to pick Sale to beat Leicester at Welford Road at the moment. Basically, the long and short of it.
Yeah.
Can you see a scenario where...
Well, I couldn't possibly see a Worcester win. But it happened. So I don't know what to think of Leicester at the moment. They've got phenomenal attacking potential, but their defence...
Not even potential, they've got phenomenal attack.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
So they're going to score tries. Sale will get it together at some point. And they were very close to clicking against Wasps.
Give me Leicester.
Whose defence is slightly less worse?
That's worse.
Yeah.
Leicester's defence is worse. So Sale's defence is less worse.
Okay. I'm still going to pick Leicester.
Yeah, Leicester.
I'm going to go Leicester.
And then
have we basically just very boringly gone, a majority of us have gone, if we do a 2 out of 3 at least, home wins on everything.
I've gone for Wasps away. Yeah. Other than that,
All of them wins.
But these do look like fairly predictable. The one with the question mark is the Bristol. So Newcastle, Wasps and Bristol, Northampton are the two question marks. There we are.
Do you know Bristol have Worcester the week after next? So Bristol could pretend, I mean, they're two very winnable games. They could start the season with...
Four or six wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. There you go. We've made it.
Right, we've done it. I'm going to mark it. Time of death of this pod. 2:33 a.m. We all happy.
There we go.
You did our very best, gentlemen.
I'm delighted to be finishing this so I can go home to bed.
What time are you up in the morning, Phil?
I'm just writing an email saying I might be slightly late in tomorrow morning. Unfortunately, I've just checked my diary. I've not got meetings.
Later this morning.
This morning, I do say it might be slightly late this morning. I've not got meetings until 10, so I might be an hour late.
I'll be amazed if I get in before 10. We'll see.
We'll see.
I have nowhere to be till midday.
Perfect.
Sorry. Right, let the boys play.
Indeed. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.